Hey Health Junkies, Dr. Krause here. Just wanted to jump in and let you know about a new feature that I'm adding to the podcast. It's the ability to ask me questions. I've had a ton of folks tell me that they would love for me to cover their questions on the podcast, so I'm going to do it. So each week I will be adding a couple of questions that I'm going to answer to each of the podcasts. And if it's a juicy enough question, I just may dedicate a whole podcast to it. So if you're interested in asking a question, head on over to my website at drjkrausend.com. Check out a blue button on the right-hand side that says Ask a Podcast Question. Hit me up there. Or you can also access the button through my podcast notes also on my website. So head on over there, ask me some questions. I look forward to answering them soon. All right, let's get on with the podcast.
Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Jeanine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanine Krause. And today's episode is all about figuring out what style of eating is best for you. So this podcast came out of a question by my sister-in-law, Julie, and she is, of course, a listener of the show. Thank you, Julie. And she is wondering, what's the deal with all these different types of diets? Do we really need to adhere to one style of diet or the other? Or is really the old idea of everything in moderation the key to a healthy lifestyle? And so we talked a little bit about this moderation, and I think that that's really where I'm headed towards with my patients in my own practice, because I feel like all of these different diets, from paleo to the ketosis to raw and vegan, in addition to the autoimmune paleo and low histamine diets, I think they're really restrictive and they tend to interfere with lifestyles. And by that I mean, you know, some people, I will put them on these types of diets because of certain conditions, and we'll talk about that later. But I have a lot of patients who are like, I can't go out to eat. I don't know what to do socially because of this X, Y, or Z diet. And that's true. It does impact your life, and it does impact mental status and joy in life when you are restricting all of these items and you really don't know why. So today, I really want to talk about when it's appropriate to avoid these certain food groups, and really my philosophy on if you're just trying to be healthy, I don't know if going gluten-free or dairy-free or eating the ketotic style of eating is healthy for you. I think it's a one, you know, our lifestyles and our diets are not a one-size-fits-all program. We're all individual. We have different gut bugs. We have different ways of eating. We have different ways of preparing our food. And we have different lifestyles and habits. And so I think it's really important to take yourself into consideration here and really pay attention to what happens when you eat. The most valuable source of information that all of us can take away from this podcast is really making out a food journal. And you can do it through MyFitnessPal or one of those other tracking apps, or you can go old school and get a notebook and write down how foods affect you, and they affect your mood, and they affect your energy levels. Because I think it's really important. Because I think right now, where I'm at with my practice is, I don't want to be the really strict, meanie person and neurotic and cause food issues in my patients. Because I do think, to a certain extent, I unfortunately have caused some eating disorders of sorts in folks, because there's been this connection to certain foods and certain symptoms. And unfortunately, avoiding certain food groups really isn't essentially healthy if you don't have a reason to avoid that particular food group. Now, of course, if you have celiac, you can't eat gluten because it's basically toxic to you. That's one condition in which you would want to be avoiding gluten. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But unfortunately, avoiding certain food groups can set you up with nutrient deficiencies and even go so far as to change your gut flora. Now, for some people, that's a good thing, because maybe you have too much yeast in your gut, or maybe you have too much of certain bacteria, and if you eat a certain way, that will change your flora. And that's true. that can definitely happen. But in some cases, we have some negative downsides of some of the more popular diets out there. So, for example, we each and every one of us really do have a unique digestive system, and it really is based on how we digest foods. And so what I've found over time is that digestibility of foods and being able to digest our foods makes it a lot easier for us to not have gut issues, makes it easier for us to get the nutrients out of our food. And really, the digestibility of certain foods is why they get eliminated in the commonplace diets that are out there. So for example, the grain-free diets that are out there, such as the paleo diet and whatnot, these typical grain-free diets, the reason that people feel better on it is because grains are hard to digest. They have phytates, so these are acids, so phytic acid, that blocks our absorption of B12 and folate and different minerals like magnesium. I can't tell you how many people that I run my nutrient, so it's called NutriEval, I run the NutriEval test on people and they're deficient in magnesium. I would say probably 75% of the people. And it's most likely because if we're eating grains that have not been either pressure cooked or sprouted prior to, they unfortunately are going to have a decent amount of phytates in there that are going to block the absorption of the vitamins and minerals that we need to get from these whole grains. And the whole reason why one would want to eat a whole grain is because we want to get the nutrients from them. And so that's one way is sprouting grains. Also, same with nuts and seeds and legumes, so our beans. Beans are a musical fruit because they are hard to break down. Same as with grains. And that's why when people avoid these foods, they feel better. Well, yes, because you're not eating something that you can't digest. That's the bottom line. So it makes you think a little bit about all of the different diets out there. Is a ketosis diet good for you if you can't break down fat? How do you know if you can't break down fat? Well, there's different testing. You can look at stool testing. You can look at something called the NutriEval by Genova that I use often and talk about a lot in my podcast. You want to know if you can digest these foods before you jump into a diet that's specifically based on that. Same thing with paleo. A lot of people struggle with breaking down protein, and then they jump into a paleo diet and feel worse, and their hair starts falling out and have issues with periods and whatnot. So it's one of these things that I always keep going back to is the problem we have with finding the healthy diet for us is digestibility of the food. Nightshades. So tomatoes, peppers, potatoes, they're getting a bad rap. Eggplant. Why? Because they also contain a molecule that's called lectin. Lectin is hard to break down and it sits on our gut lining and causes irritation. It's a digestibility issue. So what I probably should have switched this podcast to is let's help you find a diet that's digestible for you, or how to improve digestibility. But essentially, that's really the goal here, because if we are messing with the way we eat and avoiding certain food groups, we're not going to be feeding certain gut flora, so our gut bugs will change. And our gut bugs can change for the good, like I said before, if we don't have too much yeast overgrowing. But if we're missing out on certain gut bugs that help us to digest vegetables, well, now that's a problem. So as you can see, I've kind of put a little bit of a premise here in terms of these restrictive diets can shift things for us and cause some serious issues. And I actually experienced that myself when I went exclusively ketotic. So I was eating 20 grams of carbs or less a day for about a year. What ended up happening is my period stopped completely. And I didn't have any gas or bloating, which, hey, I like that. That was cool. But what I started to find out is that my digestive system changed in terms of it became weaker. Because when I did decide to jump off of the ketosis diet and go into a regular style, conventional style of eating where I added back in grains and I added back in legumes, I had a really hard time bringing them back in. My gut just revolted. And so I can see how when people switch between diets, they want to go back to where they felt better. It makes sense. However, what I was doing is I was eating too much of the grains, and I wasn't eating too much, or sorry, I was eating too much of the grains and legumes, and I wasn't cooking them properly. So portion is a big issue here, because our gut bugs can only handle so much. Our pancreas can only kick out so many digestive enzymes. Our stomach can only produce so much hydrochloric acid. If we keep overloading it, now we're going to cause digestive issues. And for a lot of us, really the healthy diet that we should be adhering to is a portion controlled diet. And I know that sounds horrible, but we are all suffering from portion distortion. We don't know the right portions that we should be eating. And some of us are eating way too much protein in one sitting for our digestive system to handle. Some of us eating too much fat. Some of us eating too many grains or legumes. And so it's really thinking about maximizing your digestibility. So making sure that you are able to digest your food properly. Now, another big issue that I find in my practice is that we've got a lot of folks who are gulping down a whole bunch of ice water or gulping down a whole bunch of liquids while eating, and then they're stressed out, right? They're running from one place to the other, and so they're inhaling their food and not chewing it. Once again, decreasing digestibility doesn't mean you need to avoid certain food groups. It means you need to work on your habits around food and not rushing from one place to the other, eating in the car. I mean, I'm totally guilty. I've been known to walk because I wanted to get a walk in on my lunch hour and literally bring my food with me on the walk. Well, that doesn't work well for digestion unless you really put it into maybe a smoothie, but still in that case, it's not great for digestion. And I laugh at myself because honestly, I'm guilty of every single violation of digestibility that there is out there, because sometimes when it's busy at my office and I can't eat, I oftentimes do find myself chewing foods as much as I can and eating, like taking 4 hours to eat my whole lunch that I brought in. So in learned experience, I've decided that having pureed soups and things of that nature are much better for my busy days. It might be something for you to think about in terms of digestibility, but I digress. So one of the big things that I wanted to get across with this particular podcast is we can narrow down our food problems. Some people don't even have digestion issues. They're just really wanting to lose weight, and that's why they avoid certain food groups. And that's definitely the worst way you could possibly go about it, because honestly, I think that, like I said before, a lot of us really need to get to know our bodies better and know how we digest our food better and know what our moods are with certain foods and know what our energy levels are with certain foods. Huge, huge stuff. And journaling really does help you to sleuth out your personal healthy eating style. It's really helpful for you because it tells you what's good and what's bad for you. Now, yes, food sensitivity testing is something that we have available now. You can test up to 237 foods with a company called Alcat. There's US Biotech. You could look at 96 foods if your food palate is not that expanded and you just want to see the basics. And so we can look at that. We can also look at genetics to determine how we break down foods and what foods are more suitable for us. So for example, I did the digestion genetic testing, and I ended up with being more favorable towards a low-fat diet. And I found that when I do push towards ketosis, I don't do as well. I do actually do better with some grains in the diet, with some legumes in the diet, as long as they're sprouted or pressure cooked. I do fine, but it's portion control too. I've got to cook them right, and then I've got to watch the portion, because it's huge, absolutely huge. So really, you really, really want to kind of take it into account that if you don't know what foods might be bothering you. So obviously, I usually don't recommend food sensitivity testing for folks that don't have concrete issues that they've linked to foods. I really don't think that's wise. I think you could save some money and basically maybe spend the money on how do you digest your food and seeing how that goes. Because the nutrient eval testing, which is a urine and blood test, it's quite cool to see what nutrient deficiencies you have and how you break them, you know, how you break down fats, proteins, and carbs, and if there's any issues in that case of processing those foods. Stool testing is cool too, because you can see what gut bugs you have and how you break down foods at the end point there, because the stool testing is going to show you what's happening in the large intestine. The NutriEval test is going to show you what's happening in the small intestine. And I really think that they're good resources to have if you're kind of going, I want to be superhuman. I want to, you know, I want to find the fountain youth. I want to feel healthy forever and ever. And I just need to know which direction to go. I think that these tests are useful. I've had patients come in and do all of them to know what their baseline is and put it all together to find their optimal way of eating. Now, if you're not quite into that, the best way is back to journaling. And I still have people that do the testing, do the journaling, because a lot of us don't realize how quick we eat. A lot of us don't realize how we eat the same things over and over again, which can cause issues. And a lot of us don't realize in terms of the amount of foods that we actually eat. It's shocking for a lot of my patients who are struggling to lose weight when they actually do a journal and put down what they eat and the amount of calories and portions. They're like, holy crap, yeah, I'm eating too much. That's my problem. And I'll be straight up honest with you. I do struggle with my weight too. And it's not because I'm eating a bunch of junk food all the time or eating out, because I have a lot of patients that have the same issue as me. It really boils down to portion. And you really do need to pay attention to portion. There's a ton of people out there that will say, you know, if you're on a ketosis diet or paleo diet, you don't have to count your calories. Maybe not. Maybe some people don't. But when you're really trying to figure it out and be the healthiest that you could possibly be, I think it's important to look at portion. I also think it's important to look at portion because of your stomach and your digestive enzymes. Your body can only handle so much food at a time. When you overeat, it does not do well for you in the moment and long term. So let's talk a little bit about where did food restriction come from and how did this component start to enter our universe? I've noticed that when we go back and research, we have research that goes back to the 1940s. So during World War II, this is when gluten-free diets really came about, which sounds crazy because most of us would think that gluten-free diets just came out in the last 10 to 15 years. But in all reality, they came out in the 40s because a Dutch doctor in particular started noticing that the mortality, so the death from celiac disease, was zero in his particular area during the war. Well, that's because wheat was scarce and flour, so breads and things were being made out of potato starch at that time. And so he noticed that, oh my gosh, nobody's dying of celiac. What's happening here? Well, when wheat was reintroduced, that mortality rate went right back up after the war. So hence the gluten-free diet started. Now, gluten-free diets have issues, right? We're low in vitamin B12, we're low in zinc, we're low in folate. That's a problem, because those are all needed for energy, for detox, and cellular growth and development. So being able to recover from exercising and things of that nature. So that's a problem. Now, of course, you can get B12 from meat, you can get zinc from meat, you can get folate from your veggies, which is great and huge. Something to keep in mind, because most of us still slack on eating enough veggies. And it's basically because those suckers won't wash themselves and cut themselves. I absolutely get it, but that's the reality here. Most people are under consuming their vegetables no matter what. Across the board. Hands down across the board. That's what I was trying to say. All right, so another biggie with gluten-free diets is that the gluten-free foods and flours are a lot higher in carbohydrates. And in my practice, I've seen folks who have gone exclusively on gluten-free diets and ended up with blood sugar issues, some folks pre-diabetic. And that's a problem. You really, really need to go back to portion control on that and know that you're going to be eating higher carb. So something to keep in mind if you've dabbled in gluten-free diets, and I'm not saying that gluten-free diets are bad, and I personally don't eat a lot of gluten myself because I've identified it as being one of the irritants for me, but I've also found that if it's sprouted and it's einkorn, so the non-hybridized wheat form, I do really well. So Jovial Foods makes bread and flour sprouted einkorn wheat, which is an amazing product, something that you want to go check out. I've got it in my resources here for you to check out yourself, but it's something to consider in terms of if you're knowing that you struggle with wheat, you might want to switch to the Jovial Foods products, see how you do with that, and then also portion control. It's huge. because I can eat a slice of bread, but if I eat two, I'm in trouble. It's portions, portion, portion. Same thing with crackers. I love crackers. I could eat a whole freaking box, no problem, but it's not going to like me very well, and I'm going to have some digestion issues. So portion, portion. Now, another big thing that happened recently is that we've got the gluten-free diet getting a bad rap about being high in arsenic. Well, the study showed 73 adults out of 7,471 in the study had higher concentration of arsenic in their urine. And it's like, well, okay, 73 people out of 7,000, that's not a ton. But if you look at it in this case, it is true that even in Asia, studies do show that folks who eat the most rice do have more arsenic in their blood. Now, what am I saying here and why am I bringing up this information? Well, it's a little bit about what happens when you go exclusively with certain diets. You might shift the amount of toxic heavy metals, or you might be getting more heavy metals if you go on paleo, because I have a lot of patients who eat paleo but don't eat clean meats. So by that, I mean not eating grass-fed and grass-finished meats. And so what ends up happening is they end up getting a lot of heavy metals in their system because the feed that these animals are fed before they go to the feedlot is filled with a bunch of junk. Same thing goes with eggs. The hens that are laying the eggs, it might say that they're organic and whatnot, but you want it to be pasture raised. You want them out eating grass, not eating a bunch of feed with a bunch of toxic chemicals in it. So the point being here of me bringing that up about the arsenic and being, you know, this toxic, oh my gosh, gluten-free diet's going to kill you thing, it's not that. It's really the point that I wanted to bring across is that each and every one of these restricted diets are going to shift something in your body and shift it off. And the meaning of this is that really, if we're able to know what foods we digest well and which ones we don't do as well, going back to portion, but also going back to digestibility, making them easier to break down is a big deal and might save you from having issues by going exclusively gluten-free or going ketosis and going to one spectrum versus the other. So I've already mentioned with ketosis the problem if you can't break down fats, also the issue with cholesterol. And for a lot of people with ketosis type of diets and paleo type of diets, it's not necessarily when they're on them that they're going to feel so terrible unless they can't break down protein or fat. But the issue is that when they come off of them, because it's hard to go from eating a lot of fat and protein to portion control on that. And so what I find is that a lot of people will be doing the ketosis or paleo, and they're eating like 6 to 8 ounces of protein in a portion. And that's a lot, especially for a female. You know, this is almost double if you're at the 8 ounces portion. It's hard to go from eating that and then add in a little bit of grain. Your body is going to end up gaining weight at that point, and you're going to have a harder time to digest that those grains even more, because now your body's trying to deal with breaking down the meats and the addition of that grain with the meat. And so it's a food combining issue. So for all intents and purposes, I really, you know, I'm not going to say that I promote one particular diet or other. I'm kind of a promoter of all of them based on what type of issues you currently have going on. But if you're trying to lose weight and you're trying to figure out what does best with you, I don't think avoiding foods and strict avoidance of certain foods is the way to go. So that being said, one of the other ones that is a great segue to my next section is a raw food diet. Raw foods in a hot, warm environment, if you live in the tropics, great. And if you have the time to eat and chew these foods, I think it's perfect. But raw food in a cold northern hemisphere environment does not do well, because raw foods are cold, right? So you take that raw food, you put it in your stomach. Now you got to expect your stomach to warm that up to break it down. Combine that with, you know, running from one place to the other because you're in a rush. You're taking all the blood away from your stomach. And so now you've got food that's hard to digest and you don't have blood to your stomach. Gut issue city, and it sometimes can be quite detrimental. The Chinese medicine theory, and if you've listened to any of my other podcasts, you've heard me say it probably over and over again. Chinese medicine theory is that if you put cold into your stomach over and over again, so cold foods or ice water, it's literally going to weaken your digestive system. to the point where you're going to struggle to digest all foods. So something to keep in mind. All right. So going back to the issue of digestibility, because raw foods are hard plant matter. So a lot of times why people don't tend to eat veggies and things of that nature too is they struggle to digest them. And it's true. Veggies are hard to digest. The nightshade family, because of the lectins, are hard to digest. And the skins of the nightshade family, so the potato skin, the tomato skin, the eggplant skin, these have a lot more of the lectins in them than the rest of the food. And that's a big issue. And that's why if we peel these, they're easier to digest. However, if you've listened to nutritionists and things of that nature, you will always hear eating the skin of vegetables is the way to go because there's more nutrients there. And that's absolutely true. But there's more lectins, making it harder to digest that you're not going to even get those freaking nutrients. So we go back to digestibility. And the same thing goes along the line, like I said before, with raw foods is that digestibility is key. Pureed raw foods, perfect. Smoothies, a little bit easier to digest. Really cold ones, not so much. Room temperature raw food, much better. So something to think about in terms of the scheme of things. Now, how do we make foods more digestible? The number one issue that a lot of us have at this point is we've got foods that are not organic. So we have pesticides, we have chemicals, we have food stabilizers, shelf stabilizers, so things that allow foods to be on the shelf for a long period of time. These are always going to get in the way of your digestion because your body's going to be like, well, what's that? I don't know how to break that down. So a good rule of thumb is to really look at foods with the least amount of ingredients. Obviously, eating closest to nature is key, but sometimes we need some convenience foods. And this is where I go to everything in moderation. Because I have a lot of patients, unfortunately, that'll come in my office and they'll be like, oh my God, I ate, you know, English muffins and I ate cereal and I ate muffins in general. And it's like they're almost confessing to me as if I'm the priest and they're in their confessional. And oh my gosh, I don't want to be that person. I really do want people to find a way to eat that is suitable for them and they can maximize their digestion and get the nutrients out of the food that they need. We have convenience foods that are not that bad out there. I don't want to demonize every single food that is processed. Yeah, it's not as healthy as the closest to nature foods, but hey, you got to do something sometimes, right? You got to eat crackers sometimes, you got to have bread, things of that nature. And yes, that might sound really weird coming from me as a naturopath, but unfortunately, I do not want to be the neurotic doctor causing issues with people's eating. I really want people to feel good and I want them to feel good about their choices and be able to digest their food and get the nutrients they need. And if they're eating a particular diet that restricts them from getting the nutrients that they need, what the heck's the point of that? There is none. So finding processed foods with at least 5 to 7 ingredients, that's kind of the ideal amount. And really ingredients that you can pronounce. If there's something on there that you can't pronounce, that's a chemical. You don't want that. That does not make your food more digestible. The other biggie is sprouting your grains and your nuts and your seeds. It's absolutely important to sprout them. I have found that over and over again, when I get patients sprouting their grains, their nuts and seeds, digestibility of these things starts to improve. Because grains are hard to digest on their own. They absolutely are. And if you overeat them because maybe you like bread or maybe you like crackers or maybe you like rice or maybe you like corn, it can be really detrimental to your health and overdoing it because the grains, keep in mind, when they're not sprouted, they have things called phytates. And phytic acid in particular is what blocks mineral absorption. So you could be eating your whole grains thinking you're all healthy and you're not getting crap out of them for nutrients. So this is the huge part here, is make your food more digestible. And sprouting grains, nuts, and seeds is not that hard. There, I will put a link at the end of my podcast notes on my website at drjkrausnd.com. Go over there, check it out. It's super easy to sprout grains. It takes a little bit of time. You can buy them already sprouted. You can buy sprouted grain flour. You can buy sprouted crackers. You can buy sprouted bread. Ezekiel brand is a great brand with bread and crackers and cereal. Simple Mills, that one is another company. Dr. Cracker is another, and Jovial Foods, I've mentioned before too, are all companies that you can get really easy online or even in some of your natural food stores and start with that right away and see how you feel. So sprouting grains is another cool thing because it actually increases the amount of protein and lowers the carbohydrate content of the grain. And it also is going to make the vitamins and minerals more available because there's not that phytic acid blocking them, like I already mentioned. Plus, not only that, phytic acid, it irritates the gut lining and can cause leaky gut. Nobody wants that. That's another issue of why we even have food sensitivities in the first place. So make your grains, your nuts, and your seeds more digestible. This also goes along the lines with corn, because corn and lectins, so corn has lectins. Lectins are proteins just like the phytates, and they bind to the gut lining and irritate it just the same. And in particular, going to block nutrient absorption, but also can cause autoimmune attack on your gut lining. So these lectins are why nightshades are often taken out in the autoimmune paleo type of diet, because any autoimmune condition has a source at the gut. I truly believe that the gut lining became leaky, and now we've caused an autoimmune attack. And any autoimmune attack on the gut lining, so this could be Crohn's, this can be ulcerative colitis, this can be some of the lymphocytic colitis types of issues. These can be autoimmune based. And this is usually because of too much lectins in the food. And so, like I said before, sprout the grains, sprout your nuts and seeds and legumes. And with nightshades, cook them in a pressure cooker to lower the amount of lectins. Now, of course, if you have autoimmune conditions, I usually do have folks keep out the nightshades for a while and then slowly reintroduce them, cooking them properly for digestibility. So all about digestibility. And now that we have Instapots, which are amazing little pressure cookers, and we've got the ability to sprout pretty easily, there's kits and everything for it, you have no excuse not to try this stuff out. It's not that hard. It's super easy. So there you have it. Now, the best way to go about eating is really to cook your food or at least eat at room temperature. The warmer your food, the better it is for the digestive system. The colder it is, the harder it is on the digestive system. The other biggie I've mentioned is focus on eating. Too many of us are multitasking while we're eating. We're doing other things. We're stressed out. Not a good thing. Focus on eating. The other biggie is a lot of us will drink ice water or a ton of liquid during meals. Don't do that. That dilutes your enzymes, and the ice water numbs your digestive system lining so it can't even release any of the stomach acid or enzymes it needs to. So don't do that. Just sip on warm drinks and just a little bit of it. Channel a little bit from the last Asian restaurant you went to with that tiny little teacup where you just sip. I even have folks buy those tiny little cups. Now, another biggie is when we want to indulge, a lot of us love ice cream. And ice cream is a cold gut bomb. It's hard to break down. I usually will make sure if I'm going to do ice cream that I've had a warm meal before it, or I've added cinnamon to it or something with warm spices like ginger or cinnamon or a little cayenne. There is Mexican chocolate ice cream. Yummy stuff. So keep that in mind. So let's go back to what overall I want folks to think about in the picture here. I don't want folks to think that they have to avoid a certain food group to be healthy. That is not good. It can cause a lot of mental anguish, and you could struggle when you go out to eat for sure. But also it can sometimes leave you this mental thought of like, oh my gosh, I'm cheating. I'm not being healthy. And then that like causes mind stuff. Because sometimes when people are like, oh, I had wheat today, I'm going to have wheat all day. I'm just going to mess it all up. I'm just going to eat a whole bunch of wheat because today's my wheat day. And tomorrow I'm going to go back to being wheat-free and gluten-free. But today I'm doing it, man. And that mentality of going overboard on one day and then the next day backing off and having these cheat days, this is a problem. I really feel like it's almost borderline eating disorder. And I don't want people to have that. I don't want people to struggle through that. I really would like that people think about food in a matter of digestibility, not in terms of this food's evil, this food's evil. Because guess what? Every single food fad that's out there right now in terms of diets, there's a million people that can say why it's great for you and a million people can say why it's detrimental. But no one is going to argue moderation. No one's going to argue because it's really not going to mess with your brain, because you're going to be able to have a little bit of the foods that you really like. Because let's face it, like I just said before, if you have wheat and then you know, are like, oh, I had, a biscuit for breakfast. Then you're like, sweet, I'm having pizza for lunch because I already had wheat and I'm just going to keep going. And then you're going to have pasta for dinner and God knows whatever else is going to happen in that day. It's borderline eating disorder. So I really want people to think about how these diets impact you and not just jumping on them because it's a fad, or I do paleo because I'm a CrossFitter. Okay. Yes, you need to increase your muscle and have more protein if you're working out in a CrossFit style, but I don't think you need to avoid certain food groups just because you're a CrossFitter. So you guys get the idea. So I do think it is appropriate to avoid certain foods if you've noticed gut issues. So if you've got gas, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, acid reflux, and it's strong enough that it's bothering you, I definitely think that looking at your food sensitivities. I do think that leaving the foods that you're sensitive out to a certain amount of time is key to help you to get rid of your symptoms. Absolutely. But I don't think it's something that someone needs to be doing permanently, because these food sensitivity testings are not like telling you that if you eat this thing, you're going to die if it is a delayed sensitivity response. So IgG, food sensitivity testing, it's food sensitivity. It's what your body's reacted to. It's not what you're going to, you know, you're going to need an EpiPen for. Because I think a lot of people see that and they think they can never have those foods again. It's not that. It's all about take those foods out for a little bit, let the digestive system lining calm down, then slowly reintroduce and not overdo it. Because I think we're a society of supersize. We love to overdo it on certain things. And it's all about portion. If I am beating a dead horse on that one, I'm totally going to, I own it. Portion control is key. So if you have skin issues like rashes or acne, that's a big deal. I do tend to really sleuth out what's going on in that case. And I do think it's worth it to have some testing done. The high histamine, let's say fad foods right now with our kombuchas and things of that nature, that those types of foods like aged cheese, wine, chocolate, kombucha, strawberries, kimchi, all of that fad stuff that's at the farmer's market can cause rashes and acne because we overdo it. Once again, portion control. And so if you do have skin issues, I think it is worth it to avoid foods for a certain amount of time. But my big component here is not forever. Avoiding food groups to be healthy forever is not a wise choice unless it is something that is detrimental to you. If you have celiacs, don't start eating wheat. You know, it's kind of that kind of concept. If you have an immediate sensitivity reaction, so an IgE reaction to something, absolutely don't start eating that food. But if you don't have issues with the foods, go back to the basics. It's all about how do you break stuff down. So if you are an individual that notices that you have gut issues, it's all about figuring it out. And I'm going to talk about it right now. How do you figure out your healthy eating style? Number one, obviously, I've already mentioned it before. You got to eat closest to nature. Those grass-fed meats and dairy, pasture-raised poultry and eggs, number one. The minimal processed ingredients. So remember that 5 to 7 ingredients list. Keep in mind and try not to be buying things that if you can't pronounce something on the label, just don't get it. Now, that being said, this doesn't mean that if you have one day where you have something that you don't know what's in it, does that mean that you're going to completely, you know, ruin yourself and your health? No. Having something that you have no idea what's in it and might have hydrogenated oils, it might have stabilizers in it, once in a while, like once, twice a month, it's not the end of the world. Your body can handle that. It's when it's every day. That's the problem. Okay, So number one, closest to nature. Number two, journal. Really, if you make a note of everything that goes in your mouth, liquids too, and you know how you feel along with the portions too, note the portions because I think that's absolutely huge for a lot of people. I think it's important to do this because you can kind of see what bothers you. Do this for 3 to 5 days. Do it before you get some food sensitivity testing so that you're eating everything and you know how certain foods react. Then go get food sensitivity testing. I've mentioned US Biotech. I've mentioned ALCAT. ALCAT's the fancy 237 foods, US Biotech's 96. Get some food sensitivity testing. Any naturopath will do it. Functional food docs will do it. It's worth it to know what bothers you, especially if you have actual issues. Then after you get that food sensitivity testing back, go back to your journal and see what foods you reacted to and what your symptoms were when you were doing your journal. If that matches, then you know you've got a concrete connection. If your journal doesn't match what came back as food sensitivities, that's okay because you can work with it because you know what you're sensitive to. And oftentimes it's groups of foods. Like someone might be sensitive to corn and not sensitive to rice, but guess what? It's grains in general because it goes back to the digestibility and the phytic acid and the lectins. And so something there. Or if you have an issue with tomatoes, but you don't have an issue with potatoes, most of the time, you're noticing like your sensitivity testing says you shouldn't eat tomatoes, but your journal says you react to potatoes. Well, guess what? It's probably the lectins and the nightshades. And so you can use your journal plus your food sensitivity information to help you to know what food groups cause you trouble and what you might need to enhance digestibility. So it's not that you need to avoid all these grains. You possibly just need to avoid the corn for now if that came up as a high or a moderate type of reaction. But the rest of the grains just increase their digestibility. Pressure cook them, sprout them so that you can break them down better. Now, another big thing here is to really think about avoidance of certain foods with the food sensitivity testing. A lot of people, when they get the food sensitivity testing back, they think they have to avoid these foods for forever. It's not the case. If you have a severe reaction, that's a delayed reaction that comes back, it's usually 6 months, and then you retest. If it's a moderate reaction, it's 3 to 6 months, and then you retest to see how the food goes. And I don't mean retest by blood. I oftentimes will have people retest with the food, put it into the diet, see how they feel. If it's a mild reaction, it's rotation, which leads me to the next component here, rotation. We eat the same stuff over and over again. Your body gets sick of it. Plus, most of us do have leaky gut, meaning we do get these molecules into the bloodstream and our body has to have an immune system reaction against that food. So rotation, like for example, if Monday you're going to have an apple with lunch, then Tuesday maybe you have a pear, Wednesday you have blueberries, and Thursday you could go back to the apple. Just rotate it. That's important. And just in general for digestibility, rotating your foods, don't eat the same dang thing over and over again. That is so common with so many people. Next thing, like I mentioned before, grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, sprout them or pressure cook them. Obviously nuts and seeds, you can't pressure cook. That's just a sprouting thing, but grains and legumes, you can pressure cook. Another big thing is portion. I'm okay with a quarter cup of beans, but if I eat more than that, I've got issues. And so you really do want to find out what your sweet spot is in terms of the amount of those things. Now, when you want to eat a snack or indulge, choose a better option. Get an organic cake mix if you're going to make a cake and you're dying to have a cake. Or if you're going to go for corn chips, get organic sprouted corn chips like Garden of Eden. They have great ones. They're sprouted, a lot easier to digest. Bread or muffins, get some sprouted flour, or you can get Ezekiel bread, which is sprouted bread, Dave's Killer bread, those kind of things. Think about it that way. What is going to enhance your digestion of these snack foods? And so simple ingredients and organic and digestibility, sprouted. So take a look at that. Sprouted nuts or seeds, you can buy them at the store, enhancing digestibility. Next thing, enhance the digestibility, portion. Big deal. All right. Now, reintroducing foods is a big deal, and I could do a whole podcast on it. But what I will mention is if you have avoided certain things for a while, like say you've been a grain free for a while, when you reintroduce a grain individually. So like one day you do wheat, wait 72 hours. Next day do rice, or not next day, but in 72 hours, do rice, wait 72 hours. So the idea is one food, new food, every 72 hours, one portion, but do half of your regular portion and note how you feel. absolutely key there. Now, also, if you're bringing back in a grain, enhance your digestion of it. Sprout it or pressure cook it. And make sure you note all of your portions, make sure how you feel, because reintroduction of the food is huge. And if you've been doing grain-free or gluten-free for a while, I typically do have people play with their portion of the gluten, for example, and bring back in like a half a cup of it, or a half a, if you're going to do couscous, or like a half a slice of bread, and see how you do, see how you feel, make notes, pay attention. Also make sure when you're reintroducing food that you're in an environment where you're relaxed and chill. Absolutely huge there, because if you're eating something and testing it and you're in a rush, that doesn't work well for you either. It's key to really, really slow down, rest, and digest. So the big deal here that I really wanted to get across with this podcast is we all have a certain healthy eating style that's unique to us. We all have unique amounts of gut bugs on our gut lining. We digest foods uniquely. We are not a one-size-fits-all society. And so I don't want people pigeonholing themselves into these certain food plans because they're considered healthy. Really take an inventory of how you feel with food. Note if you have issues with certain groups of food, like if beans are your problem or grains are your problem or meats are your problem. That's definitely a possibility too. And then work on ways to enhance your digestibility. We've already talked about grains and we've talked about legumes and nightshades in terms of enhancing digestibility, but we haven't talked in terms of enhancing digestibility of meat, fat, and vegetables in general. Some of us do struggle to break down vegetables. There are enzymes to help you with that. There's plant enzymes by Designs for Health. Really great way to help you with digesting your veggies. Now for meat, in particular, if it's meat that's an issue and a protein digestion issue, sometimes I look at hydrochloric acid. And betaine hydrochloric from a beet source can be absolutely helpful in helping you to break down meat. Same thing goes for fats. There are certain products, such as Dipan 9 from Thorn, that helps you to break down fats in particular. Now, there's combo products like Digestive Enzymes Ultra. That is a broad spectrum of pancreatic enzymes. So this would be for breaking down carbs, proteins, and fats. You can get that from Pure Encapsulations. You can also get it with hydrochloric acid to help with your stomach acid and breaking down proteins. Because for a lot of us, the reason we don't feel good with meat and tend to want to go towards a vegan or vegetarian diet, or tend to have higher cholesterol and things of that nature and think we need a vegan or vegetarian diet, is because we are not breaking down the protein and fats properly. That's a big issue. And so I really, really highly recommend that folks do a little journal. Just for fun, spend 3 to 5 days writing down every single thing that you eat, portions, and how you feel mentally and physically. So gas, bloating, etc., and mood. It's absolutely key. Write down also what you're doing with that particular meal, because you'll know if you're drinking too much liquids or if you're in a rush. Did you chew 25 times per bite? All of that different stuff has a huge play into the digestibility of each and every one of your meals. And so having more information is key to help you to digest your food better and not need to pigeonhole yourself into avoidance of certain food groups. So that's the idea of today's podcast. I am going to put a resource at the end of my show notes on my website at drjkrausnd.com. The resource is going to basically outline to you how to make your foods more digestible and how to investigate if you suspect that you have some foods that you're having issues with and how to retest after you've made those foods more digestible and evaluate your results. So there you have it. You have survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Have a great day, whatever you're doing.
Thanks for tuning in to The Health Fix, the podcast all about taking control of your health, rebelling against aging, and having fun every day. A lot of patients ask me, do you think I'm aging too fast? So I created an evaluation checklist for you to see for yourself. Plus, I created a resource guide to help you slow down the aging process right now. You can find it for free on my website, drjkrausnd.com. If you like this podcast, help get the word out to others by liking it and rating it. If you'd like more natural health tips and want to join our Facebook community where I interact daily, click on the Join Group button on our website at drjkrausnd.com.